And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The BBC programme Songs of Praise will celebrate 60 years on air with a special programme featuring a message from Her Majesty the Queen. The episode to be shown on Sunday, October the 3rd at 2:45 p.m. UK time will mark nearly 3,000 programmes since its first transmission in 1961. It will be hosted by Ali Jones and feature past and current presenters including Catherine Jenkins, Sally Magnusson and David Grant. The BBC One show is the world's longest-running religious television programme. Jones, a presenter for 20 years, said, "It is an honour to be able to share uplifting stories of faith with our dear audience. Here's to a future filled with wonderful songs of praise." The celebratory episode will feature special guests, favourite hymns, musical collaborations, and a message from the Queen. One of its main presenters, Ali Jones, said, "I've been a Songs of Praise presenter for over 20 years, and it's one of the biggest joys of my life." The show hosted its largest congregation in January 2000 when it aired from Millennium Stadium in Cardiff to celebrate the new millennium. Patrick Holland, director of BBC Factual, Arts and Classical Music, said, "For 60 years, Songs of Praise has had a very special place on BBC One. Never has this been more important than the last year, when, as churches had to close their doors, Songs of Praise continued to bring together people of faith from across the UK every Sunday. It is a great honour to pay tribute to the world's longest-running religious television programme. Long may it continue." Songs of Praise series editor Matthew Napier added, "Through the singing of hymns and worship songs and by featuring ordinary Christians putting their faith into action in remarkable ways, Songs of Praise has reached its 60th by continuing to bring joy, comfort and spiritual enrichment to audiences across the UK." The Church of England has announced a radical overhaul of its governance amid criticism from parishioners that the plans are a coup by archbishops to take control of everything. Following instruction from the Archbishops of York and Canterbury, the Bishop of Leeds, Nick Baines, has published his findings as to how to provide more transparent and accountable governance for the Church, and has concluded that the majority of national governance bodies should be merged. He recommends that the Church Commissioners, who essentially hold the purse strings for the Church and the Archbishop's Council and decide how the Church's money is spent, should be combined and brought into a single charitable body established by legislation and called Church of England National Services, the CENS. The last time the governance and structure of the Church of England was reviewed was in 1995 with the publication of the Turnbull Report, which recommended the establishment of a single executive body or a national council. More than 20 years on, the Church of England still does not have a unified national governance structure or a single focus of decision-making and strategic planning. However, the revitalised proposals have sparked concern among the country's parishioners, who fear that such a consolidation would negatively impact embattled parishes. A leading campaigner for parishes across the country, who did not want to be named, said, "Simplification is in theory a good idea, but the bishops are the wrong people to do it. Bishops are not suitable to run this kind of body. They are unelected and unaccountable. There are already too many bishops and they are unelected, unlike those who sit in the House of Clergy and Laity. It's a coup by the House of Bishops. They want to take control of everything. These are failed middle management kind of people. They should scrap the Archbishop's Council and go back to being synodically governed. They say they want more transparency and accountability, but it looks more like control." The General Synod, the Church's legislative body, is comprised of the House of Bishops, House of Laity, and the House of Clergy. All are elected apart from the bishops. The Telegraph has previously revealed that multiple clergy and lay people have voiced fears over the collapse of the Church of England in rural communities. A church document leaked earlier this year suggested that the COVID-19 pandemic has provided an opportunity for radical change within the church, which could result in the loss of parish church model in a bid to remain financially sustainable. Speaking to the Telegraph, the Bishop of Leeds described the reforms as radical. He said, the whole point of this is to simplify and clarify to increase transparency, accountability and effectiveness within the church, which was proposed 25 years ago, but didn't happen. There should be one central body that governs the church. The ultimate aim is to provide more transparent and accountable governance for the church at parish, diocesan and national level. Responding to fears regarding the alleged dismantling of the parish system, he added, the parish system is not under threat. The parish system is nothing to do with this. If it's implemented well, it would liberate dioceses and parishes to play a more creative game on the ground. The main section of the report recommends that most of the existing national governance bodies of the Church of England and their underlying functions should be brought into a single charitable body, the CENS. The governance for CENS will be carried out by a board of trustees. The report then goes on to make some suggestions regarding the composition of the CENS board and the number and nature of its subcommittees. Following the publication of the report, the Archbishops of Canterbury and York said, this review responds to major societal changes, including the need for the Church of England to be a church for all people. The Church of England's national governance structures must be accountable to and transparent for all the parishes and worshipping communities which they support to build trust, and so the Church can fulfil its mission in the 21st century. Better governance should enable the church at every level to be more agile in decision-making and responsive to the pastoral and missional needs of local and regional communities. There will be a further consultation among the church's existing governance bodies before the church as a whole moves towards any potential implementation of all or part of the report. An overview of the governance review group's process will be presented to the General Synod at the first meeting of its new term in November. Amid the Boy Scouts of America's complex bankruptcy case, there is worsening friction between the BSA and the major religious groups that help it run thousands of scout units. At issue is the church's fears that an eventual settlement, while protecting the BSA from future sex abuse lawsuits, could leave many churches unprotected. The Boy Scouts sought bankruptcy protection in February 2020 in an effort to halt individual lawsuits and create a huge compensation fund for thousands of men who say they were molested as youngsters by scoutmasters or other leaders. At the time, the national organization estimated it might face 5,000 cases. It now faces 82,500 cases. In July, the BSA proposed an $850 million deal that would bar further lawsuits against it and its local councils. The deal did not cover the more than 40,000 organisations that have charters with the BSA to sponsor scout units, including many churches from major religious denominations that are now questioning their future involvement in scouting. The United Methodist Church, which says up to 5,000 of its US congregations could be affected by future lawsuits, recently advised those churches not to extend their charters with the BSA beyond the end of this year. The UMC said these congregations were disappointed and very concerned that they weren't included in the July deal. Everett Seigel, a lawyer for Catholic Churches monitoring the case, said it is unfair that parishes now face liability solely as a result of misconduct by Boy Scout troop leaders who frequently had no connection to the parish. Scouting can only be delivered with help of their chartered organisation, Seigel told the AP. It's short-sighted not to be protecting the people they absolutely need to ensure that scouting is viable in the future. Officials of several other denominations, including the Southern Baptist Convention, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and the Presbyterian Church USA, have advised their churches to hire their own legal counsel if they fear possible sex abuse litigation. The Presbyterian Church said its national leadership can't act on behalf of member churches because they are separate corporations. The leadership of the Evangelical Lutheran Church also said its congregations were on their own, legally speaking, and must decide for themselves whether to continue any relationship with the BSA. As a result of the bankruptcy, the congregation cannot confidently rely on the BSA, the local council, or their insurers to defend it, the Lutheran Church warned. The congregation needs to make sure that it has sufficient insurance and that its own insurance will cover them. The Boy Scouts, in a statement provided to the AP, said its partnership with chartered organisations, including churches, has been critical to delivering the scouting programme to millions of youth in our country for generations. It said negotiations with those organisations are continuing, and it hopes to conclude the bankruptcy proceedings towards the end of this year. Negotiators face a challenging situation. According to lawyers representing different parties in the bankruptcy case, the Boy Scouts have suggested chartered organisations have some protection from liability for abuse cases that occurred after 1975 due to an insurance arrangement that took effect in 1976. The BSA has said there's little or no protection, however, for the many pre-1976 cases, and the best way for organisations to gain protection for that era would be to make a substantial financial contribution to a settlement fund. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints took such a step last week, agreeing to contribute $250 million to a compensation fund in exchange for a release from further liability. The denomination, widely known as the Mormon Church, pulled its units out of the BSA on January 1, 2020, after decades as the biggest sponsor. The one key distinction, the Latter-day Saints have a centralized governing structure, making possible a contribution covering its vast former network of scout units. The remaining faith-based charter organizations are more decentralized, complicating the question of how contributions to the compensation fund would be mandated and organized. Jeremy Ryan, a lawyer representing United Methodist Churches, said his clients believe there is some pre-1976 insurance available to them under policies the BSA and its local councils held at the time. Siegel, the lawyer representing Catholic churches, made a similar argument, but said some chartered organisations eventually may have to make an appropriate financial contribution to put an end to this dispute once and for all. Another complication in the negotiations is the differing views on how much blame lies with the churches. Some of the churches argue that they merely provided a venue for a local scout unit to meet, while scout leaders were responsible for hiring decisions that might have led to sexual abuse. Some lawyers for the plaintiffs disagree, saying church leaders were often actively involved in those decisions. The scouts have plenty of fault due to their negligence, but the local institutions have plenty of fault also, said Christopher Hurley, whose Chicago law firm says it represents about 4,000 men who filed claims in the bankruptcy. It's just not okay to pass the buck on this, Hurley added. Everybody's got to suck it up and make a fair contribution to get justice for these guys. Stephen Crew, whose Oregon-based law firm represents about 400 plaintiffs, said he sympathizes with faith-based chartered organizations who worry about being hung out to dry. But survivors also have a lot of anxiety, said Crew, and the problem now is that insurance companies are balking at everybody. A third lawyer for plaintiffs, California-based Paul Mones, blamed the church's predicament on the BSA, saying its initial bankruptcy strategy failed to properly anticipate the impact on chartered organizations. For decades, the religious organizations have been the backbone of the BSA, Mones said. They did not sign up thinking they'd have any kind of liability, and all of a sudden they're being told, you're going to get sued. It's a hot mess. Some church leaders, such as United Methodist Bishop Reuben Sains Jr., have been blunt in their dismay over the bankruptcy fallout. This is a very sad and tragic matter that has occurred within our nation and the church, Sains said in a recent letter to the clergy he oversees in Kansas and Nebraska. He said there might be 110 abuse claims in the bankruptcy case potentially connected to UMC churches in his region. Sains said that the BSA might struggle to move forward towards post-bankruptcy without participation of the UMC, the biggest active sponsor of scout units. But due to BSA positions in the case that are detrimental to the UMC, Sains wrote, we simply cannot currently commit to the relationship with the BSA as we have in the past. Nestled in the shadow of a grade one listed building, it might have seemed a perfect spot for a tipple. But a vicar was forced to defend a decision to hold a four-day beer festival in his church's graveyard after drinkers were pictured leaning on headstones and using graves as tables. Photographs of the event at St Mary the Virgin Church in Stockton-on-Tees, County Durham, triggered anger among the local community, with parishioners criticising the event for being disrespectful and irreverent. Expressing her concerns on a neighbourhood Facebook group, Dawn Kelly suggested that the village green would have been a more fitting location. Julie Stringfellow, thinking of relatives of the deceased, added, "I would be livid if I had a family buried there." Another local, Mandy Cowell, said, "I was always brought up to be respectful in a graveyard. I'd never sit on graves." The Reverend Martin Anderson defended the event, however, saying it had been organised to raise money for repair works on the church's clock and was held after a period of research into how churches could become more involved with their communities. Anderson, who's been at the church for 8 years, said, "In part, the event is about trying to generate funds, but more importantly than that, it is about people in the community enjoying coming together. On the whole, the people attending the festival have been respectful of the space, and there's been some real sense of community and positivity. However, like in all areas of life, there are sometimes a small group who don't see or do things from the same perspective. We didn't want people to use tombstones as tables, and our security firm was working to make sure everything was kept calm in the churchyard and the building itself. Those who attended the festival paid £3 for an entry ticket, with drinks costing about £3 or £4. A range of 35 beers and 17 ciders were on offer." Anderson, 47, agreed that the bar staff could set up their barrels in the nave of the 1,000-year-old church and began pulling pints for the festival, which ended this weekend. The money raised from the festival will go towards repairing the church's clock face and automating the pendulum, which is expected to cost in the region of £7,000. David Dodd, the manager of Three Brothers Brewery, which supplied the drink, said, "The local people have really liked it. People have missed this. There are lots of clear spaces within the graveyard, which was used by people for seating, with tables and chairs set out accordingly. Given that it was a lovely day, many people were enjoying the weather and the opportunity to be together, which was what this festival was for. At no point were chairs put around gravestones by staff, and it was certainly not recommended for people to sit on them. For future events, there will be a signage and taping off sections to make sure this is clearer. We will also have more chairs available outside to give people an alternative." Originally a Saxon structure designed in the shape of a cross, St Mary's was first populated by a father and 8 canons who gave the Latin Mass until the Reformation of the 16th century. The church is thought to have been built in AD 1020 and was first used as a small monastery. There was no comment from the residents of the graveyard. And finally, a little old lady sold donuts on the street corner for 40 pence each. Every day, Pastor Jamie would exit his church building at lunch, and as he passed her donut stall, he'd leave 2 20 pence coins. However, he never took a donut. This went on for nearly 5 years. Even though they never spoke, every day he'd leave 40 pence, they'd make eye contact, and she would nod her gratitude as he walked away without a donut. Finally, one day, as Pastor Jamie passed her stall and laid down his 2 coins, the woman spoke to him. "Pastor, I appreciate your business. You are my best customer, but you need to know something. The price of donuts has gone up to 50 pence.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.